What this man did was pure evil.
Yeah, that's a really stark quote to start with. It comes straight from one of the key historical analyses we're digging into today. And it kind of sets the stage, doesn't it, for why the events in Goobersville, Indiana, back in 1924, well, why they still haunt us.
Exactly. And that's what this deep dive is all about. We're looking at this really dark moment, this sudden, terrifying wave of people going missing, all focusing on this one, frankly, creepy farm and the guy who owned it.
Right. And for you listening, this isn't just going to be, you know, another true crime recap. We're really trying to dissect how the hard facts, the numbers, the location, how those got tangled up almost instantly with legend. We're using police notes, initial reports, and that big historical piece, Billy Wonka and Tony, the Goobersville Farm Horror.
Our mission here is pretty clear, right? We want to pull out the solid facts, the stuff the police actually recorded, but also map out how the spooky story, the folklore, grew up around it almost overnight.
Yeah, think of it like timeline snapshots. We'll show you what's definitely recorded versus what's, let's say, alleged or part of the legend.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk away knowing the core story without getting lost in just the myth.
Okay, so let's set the scene. Goobersville, Indiana, 1924. You got to picture a really quiet place, probably farming, small community feel, very predictable day in, day out.
Until it wasn't. And that's the shock. The sheer speed this darkness hits them with.
Yeah.
It wasn't gradual. It's like a switch flipped.
So what was the first concrete thing, the hard fact that blew this wide open?
It's a number. A horrifying number, really. It's the metric that just overwhelmed the local cops and, well, forced outside help. Over about 3 months, just 3 months in 1924, local and eventually state reports confirmed it. More than 72 people had vanished.
72 in 3 months from one small area. That's not just a crime wave.
No, it's a community catastrophe. Think about what that number means on the ground. Trust just evaporates. Fear takes over everything. Operationally for the police, it screams localized threat. Something or someone stationary.
Stationary and efficient. It doesn't sound random at all.
Not at all. It suggests a system, a repeatable process. Capture, concealment, disposal maybe. The threat wasn't moving around. It was like a Venus flytrap, just sitting there waiting.
And because it was so concentrated, the police didn't have to guess too much where to look, right?
Exactly. The reports all pointed to one critical spot. Almost everyone who disappeared, they were last seen somewhere near this one massive farm, 200 acres. That property became, well, the focal point of everything.
200 acres. That's huge, especially back then in a small town context. What does that size mean for an investigation?
It means privacy. Almost total privacy, legally and practically. It's a natural shield. You can't just watch a place that big easily. Public sight lines end at the fence, basically. What happens inside stays inside.
So the pattern wasn't a road or a river. It was the edge of this specific property.
Right. The boundary itself was the hotspot. And that size, 200 acres, it tells the police right away, okay, just watching this place isn't going to work. It's too big, too private. They can't rely on neighbors seeing anything.
So they knew they couldn't just sit back. They'd have to engage somehow.
Pretty much. The size itself kind of dictated the next moves. It forced a shift from passive observation to something, well, something much riskier.
Okay, so this massive, ominous farm, it has an owner, Billy Wonka.
Mm-hmm.
And the initial police reports, he spent a lot of time just describing him, right, before they even had hard evidence.
They did. The words they used are telling. Awkward, unsettling, even creepy. You get the sense he set off alarm bells immediately. Just his demeanor.
So they approach him, this creepy guy on his huge, isolated farm where dozens of people were last seen nearby. What happens?
This is maybe the single most crucial moment before things escalate.
Mm-hmm.
They question him. Standard procedure. You know, seen anything unusual? People have gone missing near your land. He denies everything, claims innocence.
Okay, denial is expected, maybe.
But it's how he denies it. He doesn't just say no. The report specifically notes he replied with a smirk.
A smirk. While being questioned about over 70 missing people?
Wow. Yeah. Imagine being those officers under immense pressure facing this guy. And he smirks. It screams arrogance, confidence, like he knows they can't touch him because they haven't found anything on his 200 acres.
So that smirk, that's the catalyst.
Absolutely. It changes the whole dynamic. Suddenly, it's not a routine check anymore. It's this guy knows something. He's involved. It basically greenlights the need for immediate, more covert action. Suspicion becomes certainty almost.
And that suspicion extends beyond just Wonka himself. There's another character on this farm, isn't there? This is where the legend really kicks in. Tony.
Tony. Right. Billy's quote-unquote pet. Now, the reports do confirm there was an arachnid, a large spider named Tony, on the property. But the size, that's where the folklore machine goes into overdrive.
The historical write-up, the farm horror one, it gives a specific weight, doesn't it?
It does. It claims Tony weighed 500 pounds.
Funny.
Well, biologically improbable, let's be honest. That almost certainly falls under what we call theory one, folklore inflation. Fear makes monsters bigger.
But even if it wasn't 500 pounds, the fact remains there was some kind of large, exotic, probably dangerous animal there.
Yes. And crucially, there's evidence beyond just Wonka's word or the later legends. Officers doing perimeter checks noted things, very specific things.
Like what?
A foul smell, consistently reported around certain areas, and, maybe more importantly, visible skitter marks in the dirt. Big ones. Marks suggesting something large, heavy, and, well, spidery was moving around.
Okay, so the smell and the marks, they connect the idea of a big creature to actual physical traces found at the scene?
Precisely. So even if we discount the 500-pound figure as legend, the core fact remains.
Yeah.
There's a big unusual animal here. This feeds right into theory three, the exotic animal angle. It changes the farm from just a potential hiding place.
Into maybe a hunting ground. Or a disposal site.
Could be either or both. A creature like that, even if it's, say, 50 pounds, not 500, requires special care. It leaves specific traces. And it could be a deterrent, a weapon, a method of disposal. It fundamentally changes how Wonka could control that huge property. Tony wasn't just a pet. He was part of the system. So the police are in a tough spot. They have a deeply unsettling suspect, Billy Wonka, who's practically daring them with that smirk. They have the massive 200-acre farm providing perfect concealment. And they have this thing, Tony, the exotic animal element.
But not enough hard evidence for a warrant, right? No bodies found yet.
Exactly. Circumstantial evidence, geographical proximity, unsettling demeanor, but nothing concrete to justify busting down his door. So they can't just wait. The disappearances are still happening, or at least the fear is sky high. They decide they have to force Wonka's hand.
And this leads to the sting operation. How did they set that up? It sounds incredibly risky.
Oh, it was extremely risky. The plan was simple, but dangerous. Send one undercover officer, just one, to walk along the road near the front of Wonka's property. Make him look vulnerable, maybe lost, like an easy target.
Just walk past. Why that approach?
They were gambling on Wonka's pattern. If he was responsible for the 72 missing people, he had a method. He likely approached potential victims near his property line. They were also counting on his arrogance, that smirk again. They figured he'd see an opportunity and wouldn't be able to resist.
So they're basically using his presumed predatory routine against him.
Precisely. It's a calculated risk based on profiling him as a systematic operator, not an impulsive one. They needed him to activate his own trap.
And did it work? Did Wonka take the bait?
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
It validates their theory completely. The undercover officer is walking near the edge of the property, and Billy Wonka comes right out to meet him.
Not with suspicion. We're telling him to get lost.
No. And this is the really chilling part, the core of the false hospitality motif. Wonka approaches him, seemingly friendly, and makes an offer.
What does he offer?
Something so mundane, it's terrifying in context. He offered the officer a free shovel.
A free shovel. Okay, let's unpack that. Why a shovel?
It's brilliant and sinister, isn't it? It's not, can I help you or need directions?
Mm.
It's an object, a tool. A tool associated with digging. With labor. It immediately implies participation.
Right. It's not just a chat. He's trying to lure the officer onto the property, into the house even, with this offer.
Exactly. The shovel is the pretext.
Yeah.
It gets the officer to lower his guard, accept the gift, and follow Wonka onto private land across that critical boundary, and eventually right into the house. Mm-hmm. It's the key turning the lock on the trap.
It feels symbolic, too. Like, here's a shovel. You might need it soon. Either for work he forces on you or,
yeah,
well, for digging.
It weaponizes helpfulness.
Yeah.
It turns the social norm on its head. And it worked. The officer, playing his role, accepted the offer and was led towards the house.
Okay, so the officer crosses the threshold. He's inside now. What did the report say he saw? What was the inside like?
The descriptions are really specific and add another layer. He reported being led down a dim hall. Not messy or chaotic, necessarily, but filled with stuff. Specifically, shed tools. Suggesting work, maintenance, maybe something more grim.
Tools. And didn't they mention something else?
Yes. And this is very important. Distinct terrariums.
Terrariums. Okay. Mm-hmm. That immediately makes you think of keeping creatures, right? Like spiders or reptiles.
It does. It strongly supports theory three, the exotic animal angle. Maybe these were for Tony or related to his care. But it also implies structure, organization, specialized knowledge. This wasn't just a messy farmhouse.
Could it support theory two as well, the trafficking or holding rooms idea? Maybe the terrariums weren't for animals?
That's the darker interpretation, yes. Could they symbolize confinement? Small, controlled environments, we don't know for sure. But whether they were for Tony or something else, the presence of shed tools and terrariums in that dim hall points away from random violence. It suggests a system was in place inside that house, a prepared environment.
Okay, so the officer is inside. Dim hall, tools, terrariums. He's deep in the lion's den now, potentially face to face with Tony. The backup team is outside, listening, waiting for the signal. The tension must have been unreal.
Absolutely. The entire operation hinges on this moment. The officer has to maintain his car, seem unsuspecting, while being hyper-aware. And they were right about Wonka's predictability. He didn't waste time with small talk once the officer was vulnerable inside the house.
He just went for it.
Straight away. No hesitation. According to the officer's later debrief and the sounds picked up by the listening team, Billy Wonka suddenly shouted a command. A single, chilling command directed presumably at Tony.
What was the command?
Sick him.
Sick him. Just like that, Billy Wonka screams the command.
And the immediate sound of the officer screaming in terror and pain told the outside team everything they needed to know. That was the breach signal.
No ambiguity there. The command, then the scream, that's the confirmation they were waiting for.
Exactly. The sting operation, despite the immense danger to the undercover officer, it worked perfectly in that sense. It confirmed the threat was real, active, and involved both Wonka and the creature. The sound was the trigger.
So what happened next? The team outside heard the screams.
They moved instantly. Based purely on that auditory signal, the command followed by the sounds of attack and distress, the backup team, a group of officers, stormed the house. Full breach. Their objective? Neutralize the threat, rescue their officer.
It sounds incredibly chaotic. Did the reports detail what they found immediately inside?
This is where the official reports become somewhat careful. They avoid graphic descriptions, which is common in these kinds of records, but they convey the intensity through the impression it left on the responding officers.
How did they phrase it?
The consensus in the reports, and repeated in that historical analysis, is that what they encountered inside could only be described as a scene of true horror.
A scene of true horror. So no explicit details of the struggle or, you know, gore, but the impact was clearly overwhelming.
Right. It's a deliberate choice, probably. It confirms the location, the attack, the struggle, the outcome for Wonka and Tony, who were presumably neutralized in the breach. But it leaves the specific, visceral details to the imagination, or rather, to the traumatized memory of the officers who went in.
And that lack of explicit detail, paradoxically, might actually make the legend even stronger, right? The horror is implied, not detailed.
Absolutely. It allows the story to retain its power. The official record confirms the framework of the event, the attack, the breach, the horror, but the nature of that horror remains shrouded just enough to fuel speculation and legend for, well, a century now. Okay, so we've walked through the timeline. The insane number of disappearances, the creepy owner with his smirk, the bizarre free shovel lure, the command sick him, and the final horrific breach. Now let's step back and connect some dots analytically.
Right. Let's look at the patterns, the motifs that make this story stick in your head. We talked about false hospitality that shovel offer. It's such a powerful perversion of something normal.
Completely. It turns kindness into bait. It uses social convention as a weapon to get past your defenses. And then you have the monster as pet motif with Tony. That domestication of something inherently terrifying, making it part of the household. It's deeply unsettling.
It makes the whole farm feel like Wonka's twisted little kingdom operating by its own rules.
Which brings us to the idea of liminal spaces. The thresholds were key. Moving from the public road onto the private 200 acres. That was the first transition into his control zone. Then moving from the seemingly open farmyard into the confines of that dim hall inside the house.
Each step deeper into his territory was a step further away from safety, from normal rules.
Precisely. He controlled those transitions, absolutely, accepting the shovel, crossing the threshold. Those were the points of no return. He created this isolated world where his rules were the only ones that mattered.
Okay, so with those motifs in mind, let's revisit the theories people have used to explain what really happened. Theory one, folklore inflation. We touched on this. The 500-pound spider, maybe even the exact number 72. Some details likely got exaggerated over time.
Almost certainly. That's typical of how these stories evolve. Fear and retelling amplify the dramatic elements.
Mm.
So the 500 pounds,
mm-hmm.
probably inflation. The core story, based on something terrifyingly real.
Which leads to the more systematic theories. Theory two, trafficking or holding rooms. Could Wonka have been involved in something bigger than just feeding his pet? the organization inside the house, the tools, the terrariums. Does that fit?
It could. If the 72 disappearances were that systematic, maybe Tony was just a terrifying guard dog or the disposal method for a larger criminal enterprise happening on the farm.
Mm.
The terrariums could suggest holding people, not spiders. It accounts for the sheer number, maybe better than just one man and one pet.
But then there's the direct evidence supporting theory three, the exotic animal angle, the skitter marks, the smell. The police did record those. And the Sikkim command points directly at using the animal in the attack.
Right. Theory 3 posits that Tony was the main event. Maybe the terrariums were for him, the tools for managing him, or dealing with the aftermath. Wonka's system was built entirely around using this creature, the free shovel. Maybe luring victims to help with the grim task of feeding Tony or cleaning up.
It's hard to say definitively which fits better. The organized feel points one way, the direct animal evidence points another.
And that leads us to Theory 4, pure urban legend stitched to reality. This idea suggests maybe the core truth was just the awful fact of 72-plus people going missing, a genuine tragedy. And the local community, needing an explanation, grafted this pre-existing creepy farmer narrative, maybe elements of giant spider folklore, onto the real events.
So Billy Wonka and Tony become the face of an inexplicable horror, a way to make sense of the senseless.
Exactly. It's a common psychological process. We need monsters to have names and shapes. So the documented spike in missing persons gets explained away by this perfectly horrifying, almost storybook villain and his monster pet.
It's fascinating how these layers build up. Can we connect this to broader themes we've seen in other deep dives? Like, you mentioned control.
Yeah. Think about the Disney World controlled zone analysis. The idea that the most effective control often hides in plain sight, behind a facade of normalcy, or in this case, privacy rights. Wonka's 200 acres was his controlled zone. He used the legal boundaries of private property to create an isolated space where he could implement his own deadly protocols, completely unseen.
And the evidence itself, the fact that the main evidence was the absence of people.
That reminds me strongly of the Klaus Richter discussion. Remember how his attempt at complete erasure ironically became the most compelling evidence against him? Here it's the same principle. The erasure of 72-plus people from the community, that mass deletion, is the primary evidence that something horrific was happening at that location. It forced the investigation.
Without that huge number, maybe Wonka flies under the radar much longer.
Very possible. The scale of the disappearances demanded action. And finally, that free shovel, the bait.
It feels like the Aladdin concept, right? The touch nothing but the lamp idea. The attractive offer that's actually the trigger for the trap.
Precisely. The treasure, or the seemingly helpful offer, is designed to bypass your caution. The shovel wasn't a gift, it was bait, perfectly crafted to appeal to politeness or perceived need, luring victims across that fatal threshold. It shows Wonka wasn't just brutal, he understood psychology. Hashtag take tag outro.
So we've traced the disturbing path from a shocking statistic 72 plus missing to a specific, isolated farm, an unsettling owner whose smirk sealed his fate, and that chilling offer of a free shovel.
Yeah, and then the climax, the command, the screams, the breach, and the scene of true horror that cemented the legend. The hard facts of the disappearances and the police operation got welded instantly to the folklore of the monster in the house.
The record provides the who, when, where. The public imagination, fueled by those terrifying reported details, fills in the monster's how and why.
It really underscores the danger that can hide behind the most ordinary seeming interactions,
yeah.
Most everyday locations.
A truly chilling thought to end on.
On a farm of 200 acres, the smallest doorway was the one nobody saw.